questions?
Yes. Doublefield is up.
Yeah, I want to thank you very much for this project. I've been dreaming that somebody like you would do this for more than half a century.
I've been dreaming for 30 years.
Well, this goes back even before. But I want to go back to your broader historical framework.
Yeah.
And if I remember the history correctly, and I think it was in Leiden, that it was the Dutch who brought sugarcane to Barbados, and they brought it from Brazil. And the Portuguese had been growing sugarcane in all of the newness for more than a century and a half before. This comes from the island of Madeira, yeah, where the whole package was put together. All right, but the point is that the Dutch at this time are involved in Europe, along with England, in the economic transformation
absolutely.
To the modern world.
I'll just give you some. If you go back to the 1620s, it was on a trip back from the Dutch settlement that the Powells, who were working as interlopers, paid enforcers, you might say, on ships, privateers. anyway, they're on their way, and that's where it comes from. And then when you take a look at the corporations, in fact, you look at either Cortina or Carlisle, actually it's Dutch. When I say London backers, it's one of the points, actually in my footnote, I actually make this little point what I want. It is really an amalgam of backers, but a lot of the money was actually coming from Holland. Holland had money they needed to invest. Mm-hmm. They invested it through the London brokers, and so the money's coming there. So it's actually bilaterally through the London. In fact, the nephew of the Courtines and the Carlisles, or anyway, they're all tied into this money infrastructure. So the answer is yes. What's interesting is that the change that takes place in transferring what had been going on elsewhere in scale in this new environment. But absolutely.
The point I want to make is that in Brazil, there is a major debate amongst historians on comparing slavery and plantations in Brazil, the British Caribbean, and the Anglo-American world. This is the transition point. There are archaeologists in Pernambuco who are doing comparable stuff, and it's important to link this because this is the beginning of the whole comparative.
No, I absolutely agree.
And it's unfortunate.
Just on that point, Russell Menard wrote
The
Sweet Negotiation in 2006. Mm-hmm. And he says all of the Dutch, the narrative that you described, the Dutch, he says, no, this stuff is already on the way.
There's a whole other undercurrent of social history being sort of recapturing history, or recapturing the diaspora in an interesting way. But there's a group of historians who want to write out anything other than English. And I'm not talking about British. I'm talking about English. It's an interesting phenomenon. But if you go to, for instance, Gragg's History of Englishmen Transplanted in 2004, what you find is they actually it was a very well-researched book. They've gone through all these historical documents, but they've excised anything related to the Dutch into the discussion. It's amazing when you go through it and you have that and you realize that you've read it and you realize that they're there. And you realize the excision in history to make it that, because, and they just uses one phrase in a document where a planter in Barbados wished to be English. Well, you know, we can wish to be a lot of things. But that means he's English. Englishman transplanted. Now, it's interesting that Englishmen can be transplanted, but slaves are transformed. I say no. All these people are transformed. And England is transformed. And in fact, that's another study with that group I'm working with, the English group in Yorkshire, in York. One of the side studies is actually taking a look at the ways in which the wealth from the Caribbean is being used to transform the English environment. And for instance, when I was at Harewood House, which is one of the Lassells, which owned the Mount Lovies planter, mega planters, the landscape tries to recreate the Caribbean into the fact that you go to the kitchen, they have the tortoise shell above the sink. When you go to the yard, they have the papaya and a heated wall so it can survive the winter because they want to feel home because their home is also in the Caribbean. So you have this this change. Now, and it's just for any landscape historians in our midst, one of the fascinating things is there's a series of paintings done, Turner paintings done at the late 18th century, were considered to be the quintessential British landscape. And what do they paint? They paint at Harewood, and they paint somebody who was in the Caribbean for two centuries. Interesting thought. Okay, go ahead.
I love the Dutch because with them, with all commerce all the time, what I believe in too. But can I ask a question? I once asked, I was at the Civil War Institute last summer, and someone said to me, what really brought on slavery was the indentured, when their term was up, left, and so they had to have labor, is what we're dealing with today. So is that what happened?
One of the equations when you think about what's going on, but I'll stick with my period, this mid 17th century, and obviously you can see from the slide that there's European indentured contract with individuals who are part of the estate. There are enslaved Africans who are part of the mix, and there are native peoples who are being brought in, and that actually becomes a debate: are they slave, are they indentured? That was actually a more heated debate whether or not Africans should be slaves. They thought Africans should be slaves, but Indians are not sure about that, because if you do that, then we can't be bad at the Spanish, because the Spanish, it's amazing contortions of things when you look into it. But one of the things that plays out is that what is the cost of a labor? Yeah. And what is the control of a labor? And if you have to give up control over a period of time, and you have a capital investment, in time, which costs less for you to maintain? Right. And so, there's all kinds of variables that go into it, but that's kind of one of the other one is, they simply ran out of supplies of people who they could steal from Ireland, and they emptied out. Take a look at the map of Scotland. By the way, I have a bias here. And I mentioned I got an inroad because of the name Armstrong, because his family were indentured people who are gone, and just happened to use that, the linguistic tie, and it gave me 15 minutes of access. But you think about it,
The corporations, do you know any of them by name?
Well, that's interesting. Some of them do have names, but they'll be London backers. And for instance, even that map has the name of that corporate backing. In other words, it has the name of the five principal factors who are sponsoring it. But there's more. In these earliest settings, they actually had this combination of parliamentary crowns. There's this debate going on, so it was playing it out. You would not only have to get your patent, but then you'd have to get your grant from the king. Mm-hmm. And of course, Charles, I don't think anyone at the time had a kind word for him in the Caribbean. Because he would simply allocate the same land to more people. And so what happened here is he actually gave it to two groups. And then they fought it out. So you have multiple layers of...
paid by both.
Yeah, and he took money from each. So you ask, which is the corporate? The corporate are these people who are able to get it through Parliament, get it through the Crown, because you actually have to do both because you never know who's going to be in power at that time. You go through and you pay your folks off. You now have to get someone who backs you. So you have five or six merchants. Those guys, when you look at it, they're actually usually going to be based in London. They're going to have interest in Edinburgh or in Holland, all coming together in terms of interests. But it's going to say, for instance, the London merchants as that one that the document gives us. So what's nice about this is that if we had a question about it, we can go back to that document and say, well, look at this kind of characterizes the type of transaction, which is going to be repeated and repeated and repeated in multiple settings. The scale then changes over time, because then one corporation would then ultimately get multiple interests, and I've come across a really fascinating partnering phenomenon, but that's a whole other night. in terms of how you're going to get capital investment fast, is you basically do parcels out of half your interest, you get 10 times as much more money, and then you just escalate it across space and time and money. People. Yeah, go ahead. Or, yeah.
Aren't all...
Aren't
Aren't all the labor regimes in the Americas related in many ways to the availability of supply? And I was also struck by your comment in terms of the relationship of the plantation to the metropole and the power. You really can't understand the Spanish colonial regime in the Americas either without that tension between, and even the wars against the viceroys who tried to impose the new laws controlling the labor regime available to the...
That's absolutely right. In fact, one of the nice things about working at Syracuse is that my colleagues were also doing Gold Coast and so actually one of our students did a shipwreck of the same period, 1640s. It's only one that excavated, the only one's been excavated for that time period, off the coast of Elmina. And so we're actually getting a sense of the cargoes that are being carried. There's people, goods, cargo, all kinds of things being transported. What's interesting about that is that was a Dutch ship. It tells about the Dutch involvement. So this issue, I don't know how people are going to write the Dutch out of history. I'm not sure whether they don't want to have
actually
complicit.
Actually, they're being written in more and more.
I'm not sure if they don't want to be complicit, so they would say like the Dutch, they don't want them in the history, or if it's the other way around. But it's fascinating to me. Why bother? I mean, they're there.
I just had a question and an observation. The question is, in your excavations, are you seeing, is there any evidence of any continuity between the Amerindian, the native population, and the...
Yeah, very good question, and that's come up again and again.
My understanding of that is on Barbados that there were no Indians there when the British arrived, but I'm wondering if that's just...
I think the answer is that at the point of the English arriving, there were no natives. There had been previously, there were not. And that's actually interesting because we're actually finding Native American wares among the multinational group of folks that are there. I think we're finding our Guyanese wares. And I think we're finding evidence of this group coming from North and South America.
Native Americans from Guyana?
Yeah, because they're there. And they're the ones explicitly in the record teaching the people to farm. I know of no other place in sort of the English colonial where it's so explicit that they contracted these teachers. They contracted 30 people to teach them how to grow, and they go through it. And they list each crop that they taught them to grow. And so I'd almost be shocked if we do analysis and don't find trace element analysis that shows us some stuff from South America.
And so my one observation is, I believe it's Codrington. There was a Codrington on Barbados who moved to Antigua and established Betty's Hope. For the last 6 years, I've been doing a historical reconstruction project in the Caribbean, and we took a core in the watershed of Betty's Hope that was about 6 meters deep, 6 meters deep, and we were convinced and we made a bet that our radiocarbon date from the bottom of this core in Betty's Hope watershed would be about 4,000 BC. Well, at the base of that core, we got a radiocarbon date of about 1490. So we had 6 meters of deposit, looking at it, in terms of the title of your paper, Archaeology of an Emerging Landscape of Power and Enslavement, the English Codrington on Betty's Hope clear-cut the entire landscape, resulting in massive erosion, and there's the emerging landscape of power and enslavement.
Right. That's something we want to do in our project ultimately as well. We have the information when we get the data together, and we really like to be able to GIS document these ratios on states. But it was a clear cut phenomena. It was rapid.
I believe that.
I was wondering, have you read Capitalism and Slavery by Eric Williams?
Yes.
Yeah. Because it really chronicles the whole money system in
slavery. Yeah, exactly. In fact, when you go back, this is like written in 1941. I mean, he's catching this before, the generation before other people are catching on to the significance of this. And so I'd say that's one of those things that you follow it forward, and that kind of sets up a lot of the modeling that, that takes place in our understanding.
Right, a lot of the corporations started because of slavery.
Yeah, I have to say, I think my view of that.
What is the sense of corporation?
What's the sense
of... If you compare today corporation,
it's a
different situation.
In fact, when you look at it, a lot of the corporate structure you find in England is based on Dutch and Danish corporate systems. Mm-hmm. The stock markets began there. The notion of corporations is embedded in all this. And you had to please your investors. For instance, the Jamestown colony actually was closed down in 1624. Because they didn't show capital gain. And if James hadn't died, he died, and they kind of got a reprieve. But they did change the corporation in 1625. 1620, that's the same. So that you have to say that the English had been economically, adventuresome. There's all kinds of people wanting to make money, but they're abject failures financially.
The absence of the natives, is that simply because diseases move faster than the people? And the other thing is...
There's a lot of sort of partial answers to that, but in situations we actually come to, and they're gone, we can say they're gone, we know that there was interaction on the island. We know there have been people there, we know that there was stock left on the island. The storyline goes, and again, until otherwise we know, is that the populations probably were slaved out or taken out for the mines of the Dominican Republic and elsewhere, that they kind of moved, or even to South America, that they got moved off the island. They're very difficult to defend. How many times do these European early settlements get wiped out because a ship comes in and can knock anybody off? There's always the fear of that. That's why they built forts first. But at the time, what there was an abundance of hogs. There was even some wild turkeys. There was stuff like that on the island. In fact, let's talk about dietary. We found a lot of hog blood. I think we should be able to do genetic studies. There's enough to have been done now to actually determine whether or not these were of a different stock than got brought in once the English came in. But because there's lots of accounts of, in fact, visitors were just enthralled with how they had these feasts of all these food that they could just go and hunt. And then 10 years later, they're going, there's no animals on the island. They hunted it out fast, just to cut out the forest there.
Just a slight question. If you need to expand from 30 laborers to 300,
yeah,
the cheapest way to do that would be indentured servitude. So if they shifted to slavery, that means the cost of the slaves goes down. What lowered the cost of slavery?
There's a lot of variables, and I can spend all night talking about that, but there's a couple things going on. One is the cost of indentured increases by supply, and that is that it is also a time it's hard to get the supply, and you also have an incredible exponential need. At the same time, remember, slavery has existed. They have now, by 1637, they formalized the principle of it so they can actually feel as if their investment of 40 pounds for a slave versus 10 pounds for an indenture is going to give them a reward that's going to go on in perpetuity. So now it is absolutely economically more gain. The other thing is you can have control. So if it's a control issue that goes forward. So when you think about it, honestly, when it comes down to it, you probably couldn't have ultimately supplied the scale of this. I mean, it's hard to imagine. It's like the dot-com boom. It's hard to imagine what was going on. I mean, and again, like I said, I started off by saying it's just hard to imagine people accepting slavery. It's one thing that, there's been class structuring all along. There's class structuring with all this stuff going on. But how is it that you come to, and part of it is that there are a few who are getting so much money, so much. In fact, I'm beginning to find traces of kind of this sort of first-generation guilt for gelt, and that is that the Codringtons and the Draxes, they're these people who are making huge amounts of money. They, when they write their wills, actually wrote in money for free schools. And which is really fascinating because it does not occur a generation later. It's kind of like, I haven't quite worked through why it is they do that, but they do that. And if I noticed in one place, it actually, the guys in Jamaica did it, the guys in Barbados did it, and two families, people in Barbados did it. But all before 1720, between 1670 and 1720, and then by then it was so structured in the law that they could not do it legally. Well, some people try it still, but that's another.
But this was first time unprecedented in Greece, and ancient in Greece. This was the same idea.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, the thing is that there is complicity in Africa that it was relatively easy. Not that whites have to go into the interior, but blacks would go into the interior, gather people, bring them to the coast. And there was a bit of a rationale. You know, okay, these are people who are captured by Africans, so it's not such a moral stain on us. And so you can deal with the immorality of it by saying, guess what? The Africans themselves were complicit in this.
I mean, that was part of... I was saying, in its era, that was part of an argument that was made. But, I mean... Doesn't change the outcome.
Did Bartolome de las Casas prepare an intellectual rationale for the slavery of Africans to take care of Native Americans? I mean, there was a kind of European intellectual rationale.
Yeah, and in fact, that was adopted by the Barbadians almost word for word to create the first slave codes. Which also created the basis. I mentioned that those Guyanan indentures who had become enslaved, that became the basis for how they were freed. And ironically, the freeing of three Native Americans in Barbados also set the infrastructure for the codification of the defense of slavery for Africans. A separation between Native Americans and their opportunities for God and Africans enough to... Anyway, it's an interesting thing that occurs. But in granting the freedom to those three, the legal system then was even further codified to enforce slavery for Africans.
I think we should begin to let him off the hook.
Yeah. We're getting into the Reformation, Catholicism, and the
Protestantism. Okay, does anyone want to have the last question?
We'll
continue the discussion.
Oh, yeah, you can continue the discussion in the bar afterwards.
Right.
Anyone have a last question?
Yeah. I have did you look at the correlation between Christianity and slavery?
Yes.
Because it appears that a lot of the owners, they were Christians.
Well, yeah, in fact, I have to say, I'll give a shout out to one of my graduate students right now, because you know, what is Christian is a really interesting phenomenon in Barbados. I pointed to that when I mentioned the two Frenchmen who were Catholic, which tells you the religious phenomenon. So actually, one of my students is actually picking up, and he's sort of sharing research relating to the indentured laborers at this setting where they're all kind of this amalgam pluralism. And he's actually following it up and taking a look at the indentured labor, and particularly related to Irish, although as he's found out, as he kind of went in with the ideological framework that he'd be looking at Irish indentures and the separation of church. And what he found is that he cannot separate that subset because it's another plurality of indentured category, which actually includes some folks who are of African descent, people who are from Scottish descent, and et cetera, et cetera. Some are Protestants, some are resistance, some are people who have been involved in insurrections against the crown. You go on and on.
Yep.
And that's what he's finding, which is great, because that's the complexity that is human, and that's the complexity of what happened in the setting.